pulmonologist Dr. Gurpreet Bambra, who's joining us this morning. Doc, it's good to talk to you again, sir. You've been well?
Thanks for having me. Yes, we are doing fine.
You know, I know you've been a busy guy, and that's one of the first things I want to do is thank you for carving out some time for us today. There's no way for you to know that I've been thinking quite a lot about you recently, probably since about March. I've been keeping a close eye on the community health assessments generated by SIH and where we need help. And in the context of COVID interrupting some people's healthcare patterns, returning to see their regular doctor or checkups, or just giving a good reason not to see the doctor at all.
And the last 6 months have been a lot since the start of this pandemic.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about this because I read those 5-year survival rates when it comes to cancer, and especially in southeastern Illinois. And you've got this fascinating new program, which when you read into this, is, I think, probably one of the best plans I've seen right now for being able to reach out to these people, in particular people who are heavy smokers or ex-smokers.
Yes, so you're talking about the lung cancer screening program, right?
Yes, that's one.
Yeah. So lung cancer is the number one cancer killer among men and women. It takes more life than any other cancer. It's the third common cancer after the prostate cancer, breast cancer, and colon cancer. But sadly, it is more fatal, and it kills more people than all those three cancers combined every year. The reason why lung cancer is so deadly is because it's often diagnosed at a later stage when it is less curable. It's sinister. By the time you get symptoms related to lung cancer, we're looking at stage 3 or 4. So the lung cancer screening is recommended in those who are at high risk, as cancer screening can lead to early diagnosis when the survival rate is as much as about 5 to 6 times higher.
You know, and I thoracic surgeon for SIH for many years, Dr. Miller, I had that conversation with him once. I said, what are the symptoms of lung cancer? He says, by the time you show symptoms, it's too late. That's why this screening is so important. Now, a lot of these programs in the past have been kind of a come all type of, say, we're going to do this, but you're using frontline general practitioners as the funnel to bring people into this program for this CT scan.
Yes, so the lung cancer screening with something called a low-dose CT scan, which gives you about 5 to 6 times less radiation than a conventional CT scan, is used to find the early lesions which do not have any symptoms. And they can be ordered by primary care. And the patients, if they have any findings, can be referred to pulmonary much earlier than waiting for the traditional symptoms of lung cancer, such as spitting up any blood or losing weight or hoarseness of voice, something like that. Okay. Sadly, what I will say is that lung cancer screening is very underutilized. If we are kind of like screening every single person who meets the criteria, we can save about 25,000 lives in U.S. every year.
And the areas that we are talking about here in Southern Illinois, when it comes to death, lung cancer, are much higher than other portions of the state and country.
Oh, yes. I can vouch from my experience. I've trained in New York and San Francisco, and I have not seen that kind of mortality which we see over here. Cancer is more prevalent in this area, and sadly, by the time many patients, when they present to us, they are in stage 3. Now, to put you in, to give you a perspective, if we diagnose lung cancer in stage 1, the 5-year survival rate is as high as 70%. But when we are looking at like stage 3 and 4, it decreases down to as low as 20%.
And those are pretty significant. And let me tell you why. I've got a friend of mine, and I'm not even sure, Gurpreet Bambra is joining us this morning. You may have even treated him. He was a friend of mine from the Carbondale Fire Department. His name was Don. He was a member of the fire department before they had masks and oxygen tanks. And I saw him go through these tests, and then the scans, and then the treatment. And when we talk about 5 years, it's kind of academic. But when you know somebody and see them with their wife and their grandchildren for many years more than what people believed he would have survived, we can see that we've made a lot of ground on treatment. And in his case, he was found relatively early. But we say 5 years, but 5 years of life with your grandkids is really, I kind of, that heart of that issue to me.
No, that's good for your friend, and yeah, I completely agree with that. From our experience, I can tell you that last year we diagnosed more than 20 cancers through lung cancer screening program, and except for one, all of those were actually stage one, so they're going to have like really good outcome.
Yeah. So, okay. As part of this program and this low dose CT scan, is because people are worried about cost. Is there in this program? How does that addressed?
No, actually, it's for the asymptomatic patients. Okay, anybody who has smoked for who has 30 pack year smoking history, and let me explain what that is. If you're smoking one pack a day for 30 years or two packs a day for 15 years, basically you multiply the number of days you number of years you smoked with the packs you're smoking every day, and if it's more than 30 plus. Your age is between 55 and 77, you qualify for lung cancer screening. If you have quit smoking in less than last 15 years, you still qualify for lung cancer screening.
Right. And so are we talking about no cost here, Dr.?
So when I'm telling you age 55 to 77, this is covered by Medicare and Medicaid. More and more insurances are picking up the cost for the screening also.
You know, and some people may say, great, you're x-raying people. Don't x-rays cause cancer? Some of this is kind of counterintuitive, but I think you mentioned this earlier, the fact these are low-dose CT scans, high resolution. We've learned a lot more about scanning and getting this done without introducing a variable here.
Yes, so I will repeat again that, you know, a low-dose CAT scan gives you about 6 to 8 times lower dose than a regular CT scan, depending upon your body habitus. And yes, we do it every year, but if that radiation is spread over like multiple number of years, it's not it's insignificant. It causes very low risk of radiation-related problems.
Now, here's the thing, and when I started this interview, I talked to you how much I was looking forward to speaking with Dr. Bomber this morning because COVID, 5-year survival rates. We've made progress. And this is one of the areas that I know there's others, but this is the first one I thought of when COVID started interfering with regular health care. I just, after the ground that you and the rest of the program have made, I don't want to see us lose that ground, that effort. It's taken years to get this program up and running, and I'm worried that it's imperiled by interference.
Actually, lung cancer screening continues to be one of our prime target that we do not want to miss. Yes, COVID may force us to scale back. I hope that that doesn't happen. But we have dedicated navigators who are keeping watch on when patients need those CT scans, and we are either reaching out to them through phone calls or through video visits, and we are making sure that nobody misses up their scan.
And you can speak to your primary care doctor, and you share with him your smoking history.
And I cannot stress more than that these scans could be ordered very easily by primary care doctors, and if there are any findings, pulmonary team is on standby to help them further.
All right. Now, if you're interested and you fall in this category, I do. I can tell you this right now. I fall in this category, so maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm so preoccupied with it. But the
when do I make an appointment for you?
Right. Here's the number I'll need to call. SIH Lung Patient Navigator. I'd love to sit down and talk to you, Dr. Bombra. 529-618-529-0520, extension 66748. So it's 529-0520-6678. I'll get this right. 66748. Get that right. One of those times. Anyway, now here's another issue for you. Because you're a pulmonologist, there's been a lot of focus on your time as well and what we're facing when it comes to COVID. And I'm curious about something, and you're the first person I've been able to get a chance to ask this question. What is the difference between the COVID and influenza in your lungs? Because I always take influenza as more like pneumonia and fluid-filled, while COVID seems to be the inflammation of the tissue itself. Is that an oversimplification?
Yes and no. So both are pneumonias. Okay, that's correct to 100%. But COVID in susceptible population can cause overwhelmingly more inflammation, leading to very severe pneumonia, respiratory failure, and even multi-organ dysfunctions, including heart issues. And the mortality rate is difference between different in COVID and influenza. Particularly elderly patients, those who have renal disease, people with diabetes, hypertension, and obesity, the data suggests that they do not do much well if you get COVID.
All right, so when we talk about COVID now in the context, how busy, sir, has this kept you?
Oh, boy, it has been very busy 8 months. I can tell you that my learning curve has never been steeper. And frustrating at the same time, because we were looking into unknown. So you have to look into a few things, get your concepts right, and the next week more data comes and you probably have to deconstruct what you were doing a few days back. But that's the right thing to do, is that keep a watch on what the current scientific evidence is and what the practices are, and try to do best for your patients.
What's an ECMO machine?
So ECMO machine is basically a bypass of heart and lung. What we do is we take two big vein and arteries and completely bypass the heart and lung. And there is a machine which is circulating blood, and there is a membrane from where the oxygen can transfer into the blood, so that it's basically replicating the function of the heart and lung. With that said, it's much easier said than done. It is a complicated procedure, not without complications to the patient also.
And the role of this in COVID-19 is really at the extreme end of the spectrum.
Yes, when you are exhausting your all the resources which we have in the area, we reach out to the higher centers for ECMO. Now, with that said, we are not at a point that anybody will be accepting our patients. Everybody is fighting this battle in their home grounds. Most of the hospitals are full. So I won't be surprised if I call Barnes Jewish or any other tertiary center today and they say that, you know what, they do not have immediate bed available for ECMO. So with that, I will plead to the patient and everybody in the area, just do three things. You know, wear a mask, wash your hands, and stay away from large social gatherings. It's not political, it's not ego. It's basically a right thing to do so that, you know, you can save more lives in the area.
The reason why I asked is I know people who have gone through this treatment, the extreme end of it, and what made me think of is when you talked about it's the right thing to do, I have to go back and relearn and go again because new information is coming into play. I mean, I have a hard time even thinking about this until I learned a gentleman who I know who was taken to St. Louis, extreme end of the spectrum, and they literally had him on his chest in a sling, head down. And I'm thinking, gosh, I didn't know that was a treatment. That sounds something like we would have done on the wagon train in the 1890s with pneumonia. But it works, apparently.
No, that's called pruning, okay? And what we do is that we flip the patient in the bed, and that helps to oxygenate the areas which are dependent so that they are less consolidated, and it is one thing which has shown to improve the outcomes.
We're speaking this morning with SIH pulmonologist Gupreet Bambra. Dr. Bambra, when it comes to COVID, you talked about the mask, the things that you need to do. The pressure that's on the system right now is phenomenal. Before I let you go, I'd like to talk quickly about your learning curve. What have you learned that, as the general public, we can absorb that you think is relevant from your insights being there on the front line?
So my way I would put that is that the general public have a large role. Okay, if the hospital system gets overwhelmed, that will also impact the regular healthcare systems, the operative surgeries, elective procedures, all those. So the people should stick to three basic rules: wear your mask. Okay, wash your hands either with soap or sanitizer, and large social gathering. That doesn't mean that you don't have to be in touch with your family or your friends. We have technology for that. We have phones. We have FaceTime. Be in touch. I encourage people to be in touch with it. Check on your loved ones, but maintain physical distance. As a young person, if you're going to meet your elderly grandparents, you may be an asymptomatic carrier. You may just do fine, but unfortunately, they may not.
This is, we do learn something every day, don't we? Is it mutating?
There is no clear-cut evidence on that. We are keeping a watch on that. Of course, we know that there are probably more than one strain, and that can differentiate between the mortality in different areas of the world. But again, doesn't matter that way. We are learning more, so that's why probably mortality is a little lower as compared to what we started seeing in early, a wave in New York and New Jersey. Okay, because we know like what to do and what are the right things to do, what to avoid. Can virus mutate? A short answer is yes.
I've read a couple of things, and I'll let you go, Doctor, that it looks like your initial contact and the amount of the dose or exposure that you get at the very beginning affects the nature and how severe you get sick. If you're an 85-year-old man and you get a very low exposure, a viral load at the very beginning, your illness is not a bad. But if you're the same person, but you're in an elevator with somebody without a mask on who's sick, then and you're there in for 20 minutes, you're going to be sicker at the end. The exposure in some of the research seems to determine how sick you get.
Yes, the dose of exposure does matter, but there is no linear curve. And how do you measure the dose of exposure? What may be a little dose for me may be a fatal dose for an 80-year-old gentleman who's on chemotherapy.